at Senate File 1331 will come to order. I'm Katie Sieben, and I think everybody here knows one another, but if we just go around the table quickly.
Senator Terry Bonoff, hello, I represent Minnetonka and Plymouth.
Sandy Pappas, I represent St. Paul.
Ann Rush.
John Bonner, thank council for the state committee.
I'm Jen Bruntlett, I'm Katie's elder.
I'm Katie Sieben from Cottage Grove.
Ryan Winkler, Golden Valley, St. Louis Park.
Matt Gary from House Research.
Phyllis Kahn from Minneapolis.
Steve Simon, St. Louis Park and Hopkins.
Jeff Hayden, Minneapolis.
Corey Lammy, Morehead.
So I think if we'll do a quick run through in your packets, you should have the side-by-side that council put together, and Mr. Bonner will run through it.
So Madam Chair, beginning on the document that said elections, I'm going to fill out the side-by-side summary. What you'll see in the left column, I'll just draw your attention to that, are references to page numbers in the side-by-side that will show you where to find these sections. And these are grouped basically by the bills that were included in the omnibus bill. Some of them are a lengthy list of sections, but they can be described fairly briefly in most instances. On the Senate side, the early primary provisions change the primary date basically to the second Tuesday in June in each even numbered year. There is one other provision that was included in that bill. You'll see it highlighted there, Section 5, just eliminates, it provides a primary for soil and water conservation district supervisor position. The House does not have a counterpart to that. Then the Senate also includes the optical scan and voting system updates bill, which was recommendations from the Secretary of State. Largely, those eliminate references to the obsolete colored paper ballots and update the statutes in that regard. There are also some changes to voting systems management. The House does not have comparable language.
Madam Chair, Senator Brian, as you're going along, could you just refresh who? But some of these titles are not the are not I kept in my head, but those they were.
Madam Chair and Senator Reff, backing up, I'll just start at the top. The early primary provisions were taken from Senator Bonoff's bill, Senate File 260. The optical scan ballot changes came from Senate File 801, which was Senator Stevens' bill. The next pair of sections are provide for enhanced registration of enrolled students and basically require MNSCU to do that and expand it to all students residing in the state. And allows other post-secondary institutions to do that. These provisions were a floor amendment made by, from Senator Pappas, and they were originally in the bill that she had and then traveled also in the, the higher ed omnibus bill as passed by the Senate.
I remember the number. But it was in the House, too.
I don't have that bill number handy again. Those amendments, these sections were removed when the bill was heard in the state government elections committee. Yes, traveled separately in the higher bill. I don't have that bill number handy. Oh, here we go. Senate File 2083 was passed by the Senate and included those provisions. The next set of sections you'll see on the top of page 2. And I beg your pardon, I forgot to highlight that the House does have counterparts to the enrolled students voter registration. There are some minor technical differences in the language. On page 2 of the side-by-side summary, you'll see the Secretary of State Elections Administration provisions. Those are from Senate File 991, which was authored by Senator Sieben. That's a wide variety of changes, and a number of them relate to local government elections as well. I've also highlighted the section that provides for the federal continuity of Congress law. Mr. Gehring took a detailed look at the differences and what the House includes, and he may want to address those now.
Madam Chair, most of the sections that are in this bill, or in the Senate version of the bill, are equivalent or have identical provisions in the House version. There are a number of sections, though, that were amended in committee that are unique to the House language, and those are listed on the right-hand side of the page 2 of the summary. Let's go through really quick. There's a section requiring local officials to share accessible voting equipment with other local jurisdictions. Requirement that the use of additional words on a ballot to distinguish two similar candidates be restricted to only candidates who have similar first and last names. There's a section that requires election judges to inform elderly and disabled voters about the availability of a chair for them to sit in, and also allows them to request to be moved to the front of the line. This was a Representative Kahn's amendment in committee. There's a section requiring the county auditor to use the election results reporting system. Several sections that deal with filing deadlines related to special elections held to fill a vacant U.S. Senate seat. There's a section that specifies how names are altered in rotation on a ballot. And then finally, there's a local campaign finance section related to including candidates' total cash on hand in their financial reports. I should also say this bill is originally Representative Hilty's bill.
There's a bill to have a special election to fill a vacant U.S. Senate seat, but right now, the government appoints that person.
Madam Chair, there are sections. There's an existing section of law that deals with having a special, depending on when the time occurs that the Senate seat becomes vacant. In some cases, a special election is required. In some cases, it's not. And so the existing section of law deals with how you go about filing nominations for that office. So it's different from the appointment bill that you have that others have sponsored as well. The non-appointment bill, right.
The special election.
This is different.
How is it different?
This is basically it's extending the deadlines for filing for office for a vacant U.S. Senate seat so that local officials have a greater period of time to prepare ballots and to.
Wait, tell me the provisions in law now. That provide for a special election to fill a vacancy.
I'll find the language really quickly. So the section of law is section 204D.28. And essentially it requires a special election to be held if a vacancy occurs in office in a year that's not the year in which the seat is up for election anyway. So you can see this language in subdivision 6 of that section. And the requirements for posting a notice of the election and filing. And then subdivision 11 is the language that grants the governor the authority to temporarily appoint someone to fill the vacancy.
Madam Chair, picking up on the side-by-side summary then, take it to page 3. At the top there on the Senate side, and we didn't have time to pick this up on the summary, there's a provision that applies the existing allowances and the allowances and other permissions that apply to caucuses in cities of the first class in odd number of years, or two caucuses in odd number of years. Those provisions are already in law for even number of years. This basically applies them in that instance. That is actually, those provisions are contained in Senate File 284, which was passed and has been presented, I believe. I'm not sure how much time remains for the governor to sign that bill. The next item on the Senate side, and I'll back up and say that I think that those provisions are shown on the House side and the side-by-side. However, they were not contained in the bill as passed by the House in this bill.
The Senate know that, though, because actually was a House file and it passed.
Madam Chair and Senator Pappas, I'm just pointing out that they did not include it in their version of Senate File 1331, although they passed it separately.
So, Mr. Representative, Madam Chairman, so that bill then, that was Dabney and then the other, that bill's gone to the governor?
Yes. And I believe the language in that bill is identical to what you see in the Senate. The next item on page three are the early voting provisions. And those were offered by Senator Seaman. I believe the bill number on that was Senate File 970. The big difference here, of course, is in the time period provided for early voting, or a significant difference. The Senate provides 18 days before the election through the fourth day before the election, and the House provides from 15 days before through the fourth day before the election. There are also some technical differences. I don't know how far into that you want us to go, but it may be worth further examination on the exact amount of time required to vote during that time period, and what time would be allowed on the last Saturday before the election, and so forth. The House side of the side-by-side summary mentions the delayed effective date for early voting pending certification of the statewide voter registration system. Those provisions are also on the Senate side, I believe. Next is the online voter registration provisions on the Senate side. They authorize, as the name would suggest, the Secretary of State to provide online voter registration on the website. And I think I have, those are from Senate File 661 offered by Senator Pappas. And the House has nearly identical language. There are a few grammatical differences. The next item on the Senate side are the Secretary of State's housekeeping provisions. I guess for lack of a better term, I think that's, those were, I believe that's Senate File 804, Senator Gerlach's provisions. That is a whole variety of more technical changes, removing some obsolete references and so forth. There are no comparable House provisions, but the summary makes it clear those provisions are not heard in the House. Next, on the side-by-side summary of the absentee voting provisions, that's the underlying bill, Senate File 1331, Senator Stevens' bill. And those were also recommendations from the Secretary of State's office. And some of the bigger changes there are the use of a decentralized absentee ballot board and other changes intended to streamline the ballot voting process. And the other major item, of course, is the use of ID number matches replacing the signature requirements. And I'll let Mr. Gary, you may want to comment on the House differences.
Madam Chair, there are several identical provisions between the House and Senate version on this policy section. However, the House has organized it in a little bit different way. The couple of the sort of substantive differences between the House and the Senate is that the House version of the bill permits in-person absentee voting until noon on the Saturday prior to the election. I think in the Senate version that's prohibited. The House also prohibits in-person absentee voting during the period for early voting. The House language also prohibits review of rejected absentee ballots outside of a canvassing process or in an election contest.
The next item, Madam Chair, on the side of the side-by-side summary on page four are the vacancy and nomination provisions, and that was a bill offered by Senator West in File 745. And what those do, and the House has very comparable language, essentially they require a special election when a vacancy and nomination has occurred. One significant difference is there's a provision in existing law that relates to vacancy and nominations concerning the illness of a constitutional officer, and it's limited to that. The House would continue to make that applicable to the vacancy and nomination provisions. In other words, if a candidate becomes the language authorizing a special election for a vacancy and nomination would apply only in cases of illness to constitutional officers. The Senate language would make that applicable to any major party candidate, which would include legislators. Correct. Mr. Gehring may want to highlight further differences on the House side.
Madam Chair, we do also have an additional provision on the House side dealing with subsequent vacancies and nomination, so that under the Senate provision, a special election would be, or a new election would be scheduled for the first Tuesday in December following the November general election. The House language contains a provision that in the event a vacancy occurs after before a subsequently scheduled new election
between November
and December, the election would go to the next month, and that could go on
until
you have somebody that makes it through.
We contemplate very dark times.
We tend to fix things after the fact, and we don't have to anticipate every single contingency, but that way, I think, is something that we can do.
I would also note, Madam Chair, that the House provisions would expire June 30th of 2013.
Madam Chair, that was selected to me actually by political scientist student Pat Davies, who pointed out that the reason, you know, we've successfully did this in terms of the elections that we replaced the Grunseth election and the Wellstone election, both with just an extra ballot that was put in there, and that's now. Well, we can't do that anymore because of the argument that we have to program, and I still think it's a better way to do it, but the argument that we have to program to deal with all the disability things. So the reason for the deadline, the reason for the sunset is the fact that it's rather likely that we'll have improved things. So we just look at it again in 4 years instead.
And if we can have it done, Madam Chair,
right.
We don't, then we can extend it.
And Madam Chair, one other thing I would highlight for you in the way of differences, I can give side-by-side references here where people want them, but I don't know what level of detail you want to go into. The Senate provides a contingent appropriation for the local costs of a special election that would occur under these provisions, and it actually contains, there's an open and standing appropriation from the general fund for the payments required for that. The House does not contain that provision in their bill. The next item on the bottom of page 4 is the provisions that provide for a special election for the U.S. Senate or congressional vacancy. Those are from Senate Bill 278, as authored by Senator Rest. And they basically remove the congressional offices from the general special election procedures and require a special election for any unexpired term of the U.S. Senator or representative, except I believe it's one occurring if there's a vacancy after July 1st and the year immediately preceding the expiration of the term, then it would not require a special election. And this would remove the gubernatorial appointment authority. The House does not have any comparable provision. Taking you to page 5 on a side-by-side summary, the Senate contains overseas military voting provisions that were taken from Senate Bill 663, Senator Erickson Robeson's bill. The provisions the Senate passed are not everything that was in the bill is introduced. In essence, it's limited to the provisions that authorize electronic transmittal of ballots to overseas voters and doesn't get into some of the original provisions dealing with provision of federal ballots to children of Minnesota residents who live overseas, have lived there for a very long time. And the House does not have any comparable provisions, although apparently they have heard. On the next item is the section 59 in the side-by-side, which provides for, I believe that was, that's taken from Senate File 531, Senator Pappas's bill. That just provides additional information on the affidavit of candidacy. Basically, you have to include the candidate's address and telephone number. There are some protections provided for privacy concerns, and perhaps most significantly, if a filing officer is requested, the filing officer has to determine whether the address provided by the candidate is within the area the candidate has filed for, and if that's not the case, then the officer has to immediately remove the candidate from the ballot for that office. And again, the House doesn't have the comparable provisions in this bill, although they heard a similar proposal.
We'll call this the con law.
There are two con laws. No, we won't. Unless we do it fast before July. We did. There were two provisions which I have to say I had to take to the Supreme Court in both cases, and so that just seems awfully silly when we can agree to fix them here. And the only reason we didn't hear them in the House was that this was really, they're on the House floor. This is an easy way to do it.
So, Madam Chair, the next item in the bill would require cities who elect council members by wards, in essence, to reestablish the ward boundaries in the year ending in one to promptly reflect changes in the census. There are a group of changes there. Those were taken from Senate Bill 834 as authored by Senator Pavlis. Again, a similar instance here. No comparable provision in the House bill shown on the side by side. Apparently, there was committee activity on that from Representative Collins. The next item is a single standalone section with a very small technical, well, perhaps more than technical, a smaller change. The basically providing that an election judge can supply an affirmation rather than oath and an oath for the performance of duties. And that is, I believe that was originally Senator Scheid's bill.
We have a vote. All right.
I'm sorry, we have to go vote. So we're just recess.
Madam Chair, picking up down on the bottom of page 5 of the side-by-side summary, there are some changes made to the way recounts are conducted. These were in a bill that Senator Sieben authored, Senate Bill 768. They're recommendations from the Secretary of State. And the major highlights would include reducing the threshold required for recounts from 0.5% to 0.25%. And then there is also an affirmative requirement to request a recount even within that threshold. There are some other provisions related to the determination when ballots are made defective, and there's also a set of restrictions on the conduct of candidate representatives at the recount. House does not have comparable provisions in this bill and did take action on the Secretary of State's proposal in the Policy Committee. Moving ahead to page 6, there is a set of provisions concerning polling place challengers taken from Senator Sieben's bill, Senate Bill 658. These provisions require that polling place challengers must be registered voters. Current law does not require residents. And make the authority of the head election judge clear in terms of compelling the challenger to comply with some of the existing requirements for challengers. They also provide a couple of additional requirements, a prohibition on using electronic communication devices in the polling place and interfering with judges performing official duties. The House does not have comparable provisions. The Senate has provisions that basically enhance access for campaign workers. Those were taken, they were floor amendments on the Senate side. They were also in a bill, and I apologize, I don't think I have the bill number with me, it was Senator Pappas's bill, and were heard in committee as well.
Senator Slawik has it in the House. That
right.
Was on the House floor.
It's
slow,
yeah.
Is it 23?
Mine's
60. That did pass the Government Operations Committee.
And just, Madam Chairman, just a historical note, that was the first bill authored by Representative Kahn and Senator Spears. We did that in 1973.
Oh, the original?
Yes. And there was a lot of discussion about it.
Yes, the name of Senator Spears.
We got it.
You'll have to wait.
So, Madam Chair, as and staff here informed me that the bill number on that on the Senate side was Senate File 160. Basically, it expands the amount of time that this provision would apply by making it refer to candidates who have organized a campaign rather than waiting until they have filed for election. And there's an additional, more technical section that adds the registered housing with services establishment to the section of the law that allows units to deny access to certain persons with for health reasons.
You know, Mr. Bodden, that actually it's really only allowing the candidate access. Campaign workers can go there if they're accompanying the candidate, but it's not campaign workers themselves.
Senator Pappas, you remember we had this discussion about whether it does not include people who are working for a ballot question, only the candidate.
Is that, that's not indicated here, but it is that, right?
Madam Chair, Senator Rest and Senator Pappas, I apologize. I put this together fairly quickly and used that shorthand, but it should say, you're correct, it should say candidates. The campaign workers, if they are accompanied by the candidate, may use those provisions.
And no ballot question.
That's correct. That was discussed, but not included. The next item you'll see on the Senate side is there's an extension of the availability of a HABA appropriation for grants to counties for optical scan voting equipment.
If I can ask about that section, one of the things that was, when we did it, when we wrote it, we really intended it to be only candidates who were running for election in that election. But we noticed this year in Minneapolis that the Obama campaign defined any elected official as someone who had been a candidate. And so it covered, and had no requirement for it to be in the district.
Or you had to be campaigning for yourself.
Right. There were lots. And I just wonder what this...
This is, Madam Chair. You have to have organized a campaign committee. You do not have to be on the ballot that year.
So this is very broad.
It is a little bit broader than current law. What is your bottom?
Well,
it does say, for the purpose of seeking election to a public office, at the next general election to be held to that office.
Oh, okay.
And then the other thing I point out, it also says that you have to be within the area that will be your on file for election.
Okay, right. So it does.
It does.
It is what we thought it was, but it does restrict.
Your own district.
Yes. But I started just because I'm a stickler for what law should be. I kept saying, that all these people who were wandering around, mainly in my district,
even if you're an elected official, I can't go into an apartment building in Minneapolis as a volunteer campaigning for Representative Kahn.
Only with me.
I have to go as a volunteer. I have no special access or present an elected official except in my own.
Madam Chair, somehow this got more restrictive than I wanted. Maybe I wasn't there. I mean, we have a 4-year term, and I wanted to be able to, during the 2-year term or the 1-year term, to go into my district and campaign for my city council member or my House member that was running.
You can, though, Sandy. It says to be held at the next general election to be held
for that office. And I can do it, right. Okay, thank you.
But they, in Minneapolis, they took a very broad, that any elected official was
allowed.
But I guess this would do that too.
This would, all you have to do is not have decided you're not running.
Well, not the legislators. Not legislators from different districts couldn't have come in, but any city council member or could be in.
Madam Chair, just one more thing. I mean, we can go in the neighborhoods anytime and talk to our constituents. I just thought we should be able to go into apartment buildings and talk to our constituents.
Mr. Bonner.
Madam Chair, then there are only a few items remaining here on the bottom of page 6. I think I was mentioning the HABA appropriation. I will point out that one is included in the state government finance bill, and the governor has to decide whether he's going to sign that. I think he's indicated he will by tomorrow.
Yes, I think so.
Then on the bottom of page 6, there is an error in the summary. The Senate does have comparable provisions to the township election dates. Mr. Gary, you want to summarize those?
That is what Allison is passing around right now.
The Senate has passed those, I should.
Madam Chair, the language in the House version of the bill, basically it allows townships that have moved to the alternate November election date to move back to the standard March election date. by unanimous resolution of their town board. And it also permits a town to adopt a resolution that establishes a 6-year term for town supervisors.
Mr. Bond, how is that different from our?
Madam Chair, those provisions, as they are included in the Senate File 48, I believe, are identical. I need to review them and make certain that there's some additional provisions that went on as floor amendments on the Senate side of Senate File 848. Section 1 on the first page basically clarifies the definition of who is a relative for purposes of service as an election judge, and in particular, paragraph B on page 1, line 16, would allow people who are related to each other to serve as election judges in the same precinct, provided they don't do it at the same time. Then I'm going to need a moment.
And they were the Senator. What was added, Senator Olsen had two small bills with just a couple of provisions in them, and they were what was added. They were also, they're also on the floor. They were added to Senator Lurie's bill and moved separately, but since the House has part of that bill in here, it seemed to make sense to move them in this bill. And these are provisions that came to us from elections officials, particularly in smaller jurisdictions when you have people from the same family that want to be election judges. Right now you can't do that. And this is an accommodation for that so that they can serve in the same precinct as long as they don't serve at the same time.
And there's also
separate shifts that are run concurrently.
There's also something added relating to mail.
And
mail
also, Senator Olsen had a bill that allowed, this is section 4 of this bill, that allowed mail-in ballots that had been extremely successful, like 90% turnout in those communities of fewer than 400, to raise that to initial communities of 1,000, that they wanted to be mail-in ballots, they could because of how successful they were. And other than that, I think it's the board as well.
And Madam Chair, I'm not sure if Senator Rez described section 2, which is, that relates to the preparation of lists of election judges. This would basically provide for a more centralized process, requiring the chair of each major political party to provide the names, and then the Secretary of State, you'll see the language on the new language on the top of page 2 just requires the Secretary of State to combine all of that and basically make it, I guess, a little more user-friendly on the precinct level, and then furnish that to the county auditor, who then is further required to distribute it to the municipal clerks. Section 3, sure.
The testimony that we got there from the county or the clerks that go out and find the election judges is that they were getting lists of almost everybody in the state that had signed up to be an election judge. And the requirement currently, as I understand, is you have to start the top of the list without excluding anybody, and even ask somebody in Rochester who signed up if they wanted to go up to Warroad and be an election judge. That's the way the lists are. And this is a way of streamlining that so that some of that bureaucracy of it is taken out, and it's a more efficient use of the potential election judge list. I think that's where you were getting that from. County elections.
Madam Chair, there is one other item at the very end of the bill. Section 9 and Section 8 of the conforming amendment. I don't think that's on the House side here. That provides for additional optional 6-year terms for town supervisors.
Madam Chair, of this document that was handed out, the House has incorporated sections 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9 into its bill.
And that is Representative.
It's Representative Poppins.
Okay, are there...
There's one other item that Mr. Chair may want to describe.
Madam Chair, the final section is House only, and it comes from a floor amendment from Representative Kiffmeyer. It requires the Secretary of State to report to the legislature following each general election on the number of postcard registration notices that are returned as undeliverable to the county auditors. The report is supposed to sort out those undeliverable notices based on the reason that they were not able to be delivered.
And where is
was that?
This is a floor amendment from Representative Kiffmeyer.
And where is it in the bill?
It's on the very page 7.
Where is it in the bill?
It's on page R15. It appears as House Section 6.
Is there any discussion?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Bodern, did the Senate have a provision calling for automatic voter registration with signing up for a driver's license, or is that in separate legislation? Okay, so that's not in the Senate elections bill.
I'm still thinking about the report on the undeliverable mail. Some number of years ago, Representative Keith Ellison and I passed a bill prohibiting caging. And the definition of caging is sending out mail, and then if it comes back for whatever reason, then challenging that person's right to vote based on that piece of mail. And that prohibition is now state law. And I'm struggling with how this report provision fits in with that. Because I think it's an attempt to get at, well, I shouldn't say what it, I think it's an attempt to do because I don't know, but I'm concerned that it's somehow in opposition to that, and maybe.
Representative Kahn, do you want to add something?
You know, I don't think so. If you look at this, for example, this is definitely the caging was sending out
the
mailing and then using it for the election. This doesn't come until January 15th, and it's only the postcard registration notices. So I think so. It is an official thing. I can understand your. But first of all, it had no effect on the election because it coming in January 15th, and I think it's just a check.
It was, Madam Chair, it was one of, I think perhaps two amendments that we accepted. Maybe it was the only amendment that we accepted. Three?
Madam Chair, there's
a long debate.
There's an additional amendment that specified that to register to vote using a driver's license, the driver's license must be current and valid.
Just codification of rule.
Yeah. I think Representative Wigbo is doing a really good job with fending off hundreds of amendments. Was so relieved to have what looked like a reasonable amendment from the former Secretary of State very happy to accept.
Well, in the interest of moving things along, our conference met briefly and talked about some of the provisions we would like to offer to the House to propose in our initial offer. So I had a list that wasn't organized the same way as the side-by-side summary. So, but I was trying to make notes, so I'll go through it. And then, so these are provisions that we would propose to adopt. And if anyone on my side would like to chime in here, please feel free to do so. So on...
Madam Chair, you might have a vote.
Do we have a vote, Lisa?
No, I was saying that I'm leaving.
Somebody else gets to watch TV.
Okay. Starting on page one of the side-by-side, we would propose here to take the early primary provisions as passed by the Senate, so that would be including the June primary date.
Madam Chair.
Senator Bono.
Just a note, if for anyone who looked at the Star Tribune today and it is in your packet today, they chose to do an editorial on why it's important to move the primary to June, and so I think that is timely.
And we can have one discussion on that if people would like. The next provision, optical standard voting system updates, we'd like to include that. Senator Pappas's student voter registration provision.
Right. We can take the House version.
No, well, my suggestion there was, Madam Chairman, my suggestion there when it says identical policy technical language differences was to ask both the staff people to just get together and figure out which is
right. Madam Chair, I think Tom and I discussed we probably would recommend the second language.
So.
Then the next provision, the elections administration provision, we would propose to take that, and I don't know if we need to talk more about the differences between the House and the Senate versions, but
I would think that we'd actually like to look. I would prefer to look at the side by side, the language, not just this.
Okay.
And then make a decision. I mean, I want to do this part, but
and then
I think it'd be a whole lot easier if we put that on the side right now and came back to it, but not tweak each little section ourselves instead. Maybe some really good things we want to take.
Sure.
And the House bill that we don't just want to stay for the decision.
Right. Okay. So for all of these, I'm just kind of putting out the general idea.
Yeah.
Before we had, I had the side by side of what we wanted to include, but not the different, the detail of their differences. So also that caucuses and cities are the first class, I think that that's very easy to include. We may not need it. So do you know when he needs to sign it by?
House signed it.
I believe it was presented to the governor yesterday.
Okay.
For practical purposes, we won't really know.
Right. Yeah, we can just
put it in.
It won't matter.
Right.
Yeah.
As long as the language is okay.
Yeah.
Then skipping down to the bottom of page three, the Secretary of State housekeeping provisions. Those are pretty uncontroversial. Then on page four,
before you go to page four, the online voter registration is also in both bills and is identical.
Again,
right.
Madam Chair.
I didn't include that in our initial offer, I thought, because there may be some members of both bodies who have concerns about that.
Okay.
Absentee voting, we included those provisions, although I think it's important that we talk about that at the conference stage and try to get some feedback from the governor's office, perhaps, office on how they feel about particularly the provision of counting ballots in a centralized location. But for now, we'll include that in the offer. The next provision,
you know, Madam Chairman, perhaps it just means that I didn't pay enough attention to this when we were doing it in committee. But I don't quite understand the differences between absentee voting and early voting. I mean, I think I understand the differences, but I don't know why we have to maintain those differences.
I don't know where to start with that answer, Representative Kahn, but I think that you mean you don't, we're not proposing right here to include early voting in this offer because
oh,
there has
okay.
been such
okay, fine.
Yeah. clear determination that that would garner veto.
Oh, okay. So, but then let me ask another question about the absentee. Are we allowing absentee voting without an excuse?
No, that's not either bill.
That's early voting.
Absentee voting.
Well, the, all right.
The
sure.
major difference with these, the absentee okay. voting provisions here, and this was a problem in the Franklin Coleman race, was that if you remember, different absentee ballots were rejected for different reasons. So the rationale for changing it is that they would be counted in a more centralized location, or they would be
yes,
determined
sure.
to be accepted or not in a more centralized location, and then shipped back out to the precincts on election day. And then additionally, it would provide for ID number matches instead of the signature requirement.
I mean,
oh, that's okay. And then once you had, once the ballot
Sorry.
Board had accepted the absentee ballot, you could no longer cancel it by going to vote on election day.
Okay.
And I guess I would add one additional change, which is that there's a requirement that they attempt to contact people who
right.
pass rejected ballots or mailed it rejected.
Okay. Okay. The one Simon.
Well, I think the point that was mentioned is well taken too. In terms of not doing it, the fact that there is no excuses provision
right.
in there is interesting, but we essentially have that now. I mean, there are plenty of people, I'm sure we all know, who went in and voted absentee, who told a little white lie. They were going to be there on election day. They knew they were going to be there on election
Didn't
day.
Didn't want to
but,
wait in line.
But, pardon me?
Didn't want to wait in line.
Didn't want to wait in line, and our argument in the House, I mean, it's unfortunate that that is troublesome to the governor, because if it is, because it's happening now. And why make lawbreakers out of people who are already doing it?
Yeah, it just encourages stop
yeah.
laws, but
right.
but if they're not prosecuted for it,
right.
well,
and it gives Governor Hartburn legal law.
Yeah,
Representative Kahn.
As long as that's the only reason is that. But I mean, one of the worst things that I heard about it was people standing online to do the early voting, and then the person said, what if you don't have a reason? And the election judge person said, you just have to say that you'll be out of the precinct.
Oh.
So,
mm-hmm.
I think we
had testimony that said up to 10% of Minnesotans voted by absentee
yeah.
ballot in the last
That's why it was
election.
Such a big problem.
And it's getting larger and larger. So I think we need to continue to work, make
yeah.
the case to our friends on the other side of the aisle that we need early voting in Minnesota
mm-hmm.
to cut down on the
mm-hmm.
absentee ballots. Because so many of them were getting rejected. But in place of that, these provisions will at least make it less likely that more absentee ballots will be rejected.
Well, Madam Chair,
Senator
Representative Kahn, I think that with early voting, you actually have the voting machine that you vote with, and then you can't
mm-hmm.
cancel your vote on election day.
Right.
Well,
but you've
you're
done
not
the can't cancel the vote on election day in this for the absentee
mm-hmm.
ballots.
That's
yes.
correct. That is included
so
in here. You can't vote again.
Can't
again, though, just to be clear, in the last election, there were, Beth Frazier from the Secretary of State's office said that there were maybe 60 voters in all of Minnesota who cast an absentee ballot and then showed up on election day to change their
hmm.
ballot. So it's really a
yeah.
small number of people that are
and probably 30 of those forgot that they were done.
Potentially decisive in the election.
Well, it sounds like they realized they were available in the precinct and they
yeah.
were honest and thought,
right.
well, I better go vote then.
Right.
and Madam Chair, I think that one of the reasons why so many people went to absentee is because half the states in the nation allow early voting. And they would hear on the news, you know, early voting shows.
Right.
And
no, I don't think people are ready to tell.
No, they said early voting shows a heavy turnout and, you know, that kind of thing. And so people go, wow, I can go early vote. And
the results are mixed. The data is mixed on whether early voting increases turnout. In general elections, it doesn't show that it increases turnout, but
yes,
some lower ballot races,
the amendment?
I think it does. Oh, wait, is this, Michelle, is this for all of us? You just
vote? No, I just need to talk to Senator Westbrook.
Okay.
Excuse me.
So we are proposing to include those absentee voting provisions, but like I said, hopefully we'll get more feedback from the governor's office, too, on whether if they have any significant problems with parts of that. Then we'd like to include the vacancy and nomination provision, and that's it on page 4.
Madam Chair, we need the Senate vacancy or the House vacancy nomination.
We need a recess.
Okay.
Right now.
Okay. We have recess for 2 minutes.